The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Hey, hey, let's go Buffalo! Hey, hey, let's go Buffalo!
The Bills make me wanna
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey, Bills fans. Welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Nate, and we have a great episode for you. I was able to attend training camp at St. John Fisher this past Saturday from the bleachers, and afterwards, I met up with Sean Murphy, one of the many talented writers for BuffaloRumblings.com, and asked him his perspective on what he saw on Saturday. Now, luckily, Sean had media credentials all weekend and was able to see things from a much better point of view than almost all of us were able to. So I asked him about that and pretty much everything under the sun as it pertains to Josh Allen, the wide receivers, the running backs, the O-line, the defense, and a ton more. So just to give you a heads up, we recorded it in Witchcraft Brews in Webster, and so the audio isn't super clear in the beginning, but hang in there because it gets better. It's absolutely worth it to hear it from someone who knows the 90 players inside and out. So without further ado, our interview with Sean Murphy.
But yeah, this is Circling the Wagons, Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Nate, and we're joined by Buffalo Rumblings staff writer, Sean Murphy. Sean, it's great to talk to you, man. How's it going?
Likewise. It's going all right. Good day so far.
So you wrote the article today about training camp practice, and we're going to get into the fact that you have a media pass, too, to get a little bit better look at it than most of us did. What did you think of the practice? I guess, what was there something you were looking for in particular, or are you just trying to take it all in at once?
Yeah, it was a lot, because for me, it's like, and Matt had warned me about it. He said, you can't, no cheering on the side, and you can't be a fan. I mean, I'm a fan first, so I'm sitting there, and like every one of those beautiful passes that Josh Allen threw, I wanted to yell.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. So I'm lucky that I didn't get ejected from the place.
For the press, yeah.
Yeah. But it, just between watching all the guys and trying to see where they are and just trying to make sure that they're building from last year is what I was looking forward to.
Yep.
And just as a coach myself, trying to see how they run a practice, that was the most impressive thing that I took away from the whole day, regardless of how well everybody played. There's literally not a second of wasted time on the field. Like, they're in, they're moving, they're over this way. Like, the special teams is working on the back half while the defense is working on the back field, while the offense is working on situational stuff on one end.
Special teams. And
oh, my God. The way that they plan that out, it's so impressive.
Now, what do you coach? You coach softball?
I coach softball. I've coached everything but football, basically, oddly. Soccer, I've coached basketball, baseball, softball. I've been all over the map.
So is that the one thing you take away from the practice on your end is, like, always keep people moving and rotating so no downtime between drills or anything like that?
Yeah, and it's not like a lot lot of times people think that no downtime between drills means no instruction is happening. But like I was watching the individual drills with the running backs, and the running back coach is screaming at guys to keep their elbows locked and make sure that the ball stays up.
Oh, wow.
And then and Bobby Johnson, the offensive line coach, was down in drills with the offensive lineman. He's wearing a big hoodie.
He's wearing, yeah.
By the end of practice, like my dude was so fatigued.
Yeah. Oh, it was ridiculous. I saw him, Sal Cavaccio, I think, tweeted out a picture of him yesterday with the same hoodie on. He's like, I'm trying to get in better shape or something like that. Sweat it out.
Yeah, he's sweating all the water.
It was 9:45, so I was there at practice, too, in the bleachers. And I think it was 9:30 I got to my bleacher. And I think it was like 9:32 the first bead of sweat went down my back. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a long practice.
Yep. Yeah, I actually had to switch halves of the track because I could feel my calves burning when I was sitting
from the sun.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go. I was standing behind the offensive sideline at first, and I was getting smoked. So I went behind the defensive sideline so I could kind of even out.
Very cool, very cool. So you came up from New York City. You live in New York City, in that area?
Yeah, I'm closer to New Paltz, really. I'm in the Hudson Valley down. This is what, exit 46 up here?
Yeah, exit 46, 47, yeah, 45,
yeah. So
yeah.
To get to me, you'd have to go all the way to exit 18. So we have some distance.
Very cool.
To cover to hop up here.
Is this your first practice, your first training camp?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
very
first,
cool.
First time in Rochester, first camp, first garbage plate.
First garbage plate? Nice, yeah. Nice. Now, you've never had a garbage plate before that. Here, we'll get into garbage plates later. Let's talk Bills for a minute because I'm just getting excited talking about that. So what I find difficult about training camp practice to watch is just that there's so many different things going on, like you said. How do you concentrate on one? I mean, because at first it was like special teams drills and stuff like that. I mean, what do you focus on, and which side of the field do you go on, and how do you determine that? Like, I mean, you're probably figuring it all out today.
I was, yeah. I mean, as I was looking at it, and I thought I had a handle on it, but every time I looked down to, like, type something to the Slack channel or go tweet something, I just heard everybody cheer, and I looked up, and I'm like, damn it, I just missed whatever it was. Uh-huh. So, like the fight, for example.
Oh, yeah, the fight, yep.
That broke out. I was sending a message about the previous play, and all of a sudden, I hear the whistles blowing, and I look up, and I see Jordan Phillips is in Dawson Knox's face.
Yeah.
And they're about ready to start throwing down.
Now, was that near you or on the other side?
I was close to it. It was on my side, okay. But I saw Phillips, and I was like, thank God I'm not in the middle of that, because that's a big boy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That was one of the biggest things I thought from training camp was that small scuffle. It just seemed, so I watched that play, it was right on my side. I just see Dawson Knox make a normal play, catch a great ball,
yep,
and go out of bounds. Now, even though they were in pads and helmets and everything like that, there really wasn't a lot of contact.
No, yeah, it was wrap up, not like to the ground.
Wrap up, not to the ground. So there was some bumping and some stuff, and I think they took a little bit of a liberty with him on that hit, even out of bounds. And I don't think he appreciated it. He's a big boy, so he stuck up for himself.
That's the other thing that shocks you about, like, when you get that close to those dudes. Like, even, I mean, I called my father after practice today, and I'm talking to him, because he always, we would talk about, like, oh, LeSean McCoy, he's a little water bug. I stood next to McCoy, that guy would crush me with one hand tied behind his back, yeah, and it would be a weekend.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's just how big all of these guys are, how athletically superior to every other human all of these guys are.
Well, you're so used to seeing them on TV, right?
Yeah.
And they're with all these other giant human beings.
Uh-huh.
You forget how small you are compared to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you're as tall as them, they're just like...
Yeah. Tree trunks.
Built.
Yeah, because even like a guy like Ed Oliver, like I look at, like I'm a couple in, I'm 6'3", yeah, taller than Ed Oliver.
Uh-huh.
Ed Oliver is 100 pounds heavier than I am, and his legs are like the size of my entire body.
Yeah, I know. I know, and he's 100 pounds, and it's not like fat. It's not like he's...
My dude is straight.
Yeah.
Yoked.
Yeah.
He's cut up.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I remember, so I've been going to training camp after college, so for like 15 years or so, on and off, and I remember I used to take a day off and go to training camp on like a Thursday morning, because they used to do everyday practices, they used to do morning practice, so I'd take a day off, go there, then we'd play golf or go out for lunch and stuff with the guys, and you used to be able to get up to almost where you were at today in the media practice, and we would see like offensive linemen drills like within like 10 feet of the fence, and we'd be able to get right up to the fence, and you'd be like, these guys are just monstrous human beings. You forget how big 6'4" is and 6'5" is.
And then it's 320 pounds, right? At that size, too. Like, even a guy like Starla Dumoulin, who, like, everybody sits there and talks about him as being, like, a big, girthy space eater. Like, that is cut up.
Oh, yeah.
He stood up, he came close to me. I was, my jaw dropped. I probably looked like a moron. But I'm looking at him, like, oh, my God. Like, straight up huge.
Yeah.
So then, like, trying to focus on one thing over the other in practice is
so much going on. Yeah.
And it's a credit to the coaching staff being able to do that much. Mm-hmm. And then you see how energetic McDermott is, running around like CEO-ing, basically. He's not just hanging out with the defense. He's running over in the middle of practice. He's talking to the offensive lineman, patting Josh Allen on the rear end. He's going over and talking to the running back. So it's a lot of role in their head.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to balance myself. I was like, I'm watching the running backs 1 minute, and then I saw the receivers on the other half of the field. So I started walking over to watch their one-on-ones. Then I, looked over and I saw that the quarterbacks were doing some, they were doing a lot of work with the running back for a bit there. You saw it.
Like flat, like out of flat throws.
Yeah, like flat curl or flat wheel type combos that they were going on. I think that's going to be a big part of the offense.
Oh, I'd love that for that.
Yeah, and the cool thing, like, a guy like Devin Singletary, who in college caught essentially nothing. Like, I don't think he dropped the ball. To that, everything that was in his frame, he caught. Mm-hmm. But that kid's going to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
But watch him. I mean, the agility drills with him, he floats.
Yeah.
I don't even think he touched the ground.
Wow.
With some of the jump cuts, I watched him. I didn't think he had 6 feet.
Wow.
I'm 5 feet away from him. I can't see his feet.
No kidding. That's exciting.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Exciting.
Yeah, and that's, I'll own it. That's a draft pick, but when it happened, I went, man.
Yeah.
I'm not that, like, why not the other guy? Why not this guy? Why not that guy? And now I'm looking at him. I mean, his patience, the vision that he had, he disappeared in the offensive line a couple of times, and then just popped out 5 yards down the field. How'd that guy get there? I think that kid's going to be really good.
I think a lot of us, when Devin Singletary was drafted, was kind of like, it was more the position than the player. I think it was just like, really, a third round, like, you just signed T.J. Yeldon a little while ago? And T.J. Yeldon looked pretty good on those flat throws, too, by the way.
That's a guy, I'm a Yeldon stan, basically. Like, I'm his guy at this point. Like, even if he stays on the roster and is inactive for all 19 games this year when we win the Super Bowl in 13-3 if he's inactive for every single game, it's worth it because he's here next year when we assume neither McCoy nor Moore will be here. Mm-hmm. If your backfield is Singletary and Yeldon, you're in good shape.
You're in good shape, exactly. That's one of the reasons why I somehow want Yeldon to stick on the roster, because he definitely serves a purpose.
Yes.
And there's only, like you said, only two backs on the roster for next year.
Yeah.
I mean, Sonoris Pair might also be, but I just meant running backs.
Right, yeah. And him too. I mean, watching him, I don't think he's out of cap.
I don't think so.
In the team period, but watching him with the ball in his hands, in the agility stuff, That guy is no joke either.
You know what? So what was your take though? So you saw practice. How'd you think Josh Allen was?
Oh my God! I don't even know if I can put it into words how good he looked in person. Because I'm so used to doing like the practice recaps based on everybody's Twitter feeds.
Yeah.
And now to have actually watched him, I mean, I think he made 3 bad throws all day.
Yeah.
And one of them was caught for a touchdown.
Was that the John Brown one?
Yes. Yeah, he faced a little pressure.
Yeah.
Kind of went up to wobbly duck. And you want to talk about a guy who's going to help Allen.
Oh.
Like Brown. Oh, my God. That guy's exciting. So he can't cover him. His hands are great. And the ball tracking was like peak the Evans at that point. Mm-hmm. Just going up under something, praying, grabs it, in good coverage, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Allen, like, for a brown ball on a slant, I think it was an RPO. It looked like he went to hand off, but he pulled it, kind of did the little sidearm thing with his feet not set that he sometimes does.
Okay.
Next throw he missed, I think it was the Beasley on an out. But then he, third down play, lofted into double coverage, hit Tommy Sweeney over the middle, and it was gorgeous.
Yep.
And then they were just on from there. And, like, everything that kid did today, Allen, crazy.
Gave you encouragement as a...
Almost too much. Like, I'm afraid to have this much encouragement. I mean, I've been kind of slow playing my expectations for him. Like, he'll be okay this year. I don't know. Like, I watch that. I'm like, we're going to be good. I mean, it's, yeah.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. Now, it's... One of the huge advantages Josh Allen has this year is that he's getting all the first-team reps for once.
Yes.
He had an entire offseason. He knew exactly who his receivers were going to be. One thing I saw, so you mentioned, like, John Brown, I thought, looked great today. He had a couple of great passes, not even just the long bomb that you just mentioned, but there were a couple of out passes, intermediate passes, where I don't think people – I think people like to kind of stereotype, like, this guy's a speedster. Therefore, he's only – keep good at this, but he's proven that he can do more than just that.
Yeah, he's got the double thing because he's a speedster and he's also small by NFL standards. I mean, he's 5'10", 178 pounds, whatever he is. And so you'd think that he can't be a tough guy. He can't be a fighting guy. He can't, but he is. I mean, he does everything well. And I think that a lot of the hesitation on fans' part to crown him as the guy is because he's never been the guy before in an offense. But he's never been asked to be the guy. He's always been a guy. That's part of a good. I mean, when he was in Arizona, he was the kid with Larry Fitzgerald out there. When he was in Baltimore last year, even they had, what's his name? Sneed is a good receiver.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And didn't they have Crabtree in Baltimore?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Stevie Johnson's buddy, apparently, in between.
But, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. Crabtree. Stevie Johnson wrote Michael Crabtree, Hello Buffalo, that sent everybody into a tailspin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But apparently, it's, you know, one of those, like, Leslie Nielsen in front of the fireworks, nothing to see here kind of deals.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but Brown, I think Brown is not a guy. He's the guy.
He's the guy. Yep. It seemed that way today.
He's got that opportunity. He has that ability.
It seemed like Allen was looking for him even when nobody was open. He was kind of going for him in the secondary. So did you see any of Cole Beasley today, too?
Yeah. And what I saw them doing, too, was trying to get cute with formations to spread the defense out horizontally so that Beasley could be open in the middle. I don't know if you noticed it, but they had...
I saw DeMarco out wide. Yeah.
And that's if you get the big guys out wide, that takes the big guys out of the middle, which opens it up for a little guy like Beasley. So for him to be able to get in there, I mean, if you've got the linebackers shooting out on DeMarco and they had the tight ends were split out. So Lee Smith split out wide a couple of times. So, I mean, you might as well split out Lee Smith, you know, the closer. To be out on that end.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were able to do that. And then you saw it every single time. A guy like Beasley, Ray McCloud got open a couple of times. And fun, those little underneath things. Those little, you know, shoulder shimmy. Chair route. Then, oh, this isn't working. So now I'm going to come back in this way.
Yeah.
And then Allen was going to stick him right in the middle.
Yeah.
And that was the other cool thing to watch him be so accurate on those short to intermediate things that he struggled so mightily with last year.
Yeah, which I'm hoping that he learns a lot more of. I know that I was watching, there was a one-on-one, there was a drill where they had one wide receiver, one cornerback, and no pressure or anything for the quarterback. The quarterback just took the snap, and then he looked one way, and then he looked towards the wide receiver.
Yeah.
There was one play where Cole Beasley was running around. I have no idea who it was against.
Yeah, I think it was Kevin Johnson.
Was it Kevin Johnson?
Yeah, he put him right on his
Was it 24?
I don't remember.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah,
but was it the one that he just, like, he stuck his foot in the dirt, went the exact opposite way, and the dude just fell. The corner fell.
Totally wiped him out. I think it was Kevin Johnson.
And had there been no safety there or anything, touchdown.
Yeah, see ya.
We have never, I don't know, even maybe Steven Johnson, have a wide receiver with that kind of ability of cutting, getting open, and Edelman-like kind of underneath guy.
Yeah.
We've never had that.
No, yeah.
Not many teams do have that, by the way. It's not just us.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for him, too.
Yeah, it's, they've got all the pieces. They have all the right, they did all the right things, it seems. The other, speaking of pieces, when they built an offensive line, watching Cody Ford today was nice. Because there were a couple of points where, like, even when he gets beat, he's strong enough and tough enough and competitive enough where he's still making plays. I mean, one of those touchdowns that Allen threw to Brown, Trent Murphy beat Cody Ford pretty soundly on it, but Ford recovered and pushed him up the field just enough so that Allen could step,
step up,
and he just had to let him fly out of the yard down. And that's in years past, guys, especially off that right tackle side, when they got beat, it was over. So Allen was just getting killed for whomever it was.
Athleticism on the right tackle side has been lacking. To say it nice.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm done being upset about last year's offensive line because they weren't paying them. So what do you expect? You know,
right.
They had so much dead cap. It's not their fault that they were put in that position. But it's so nice to see more talent, skill at that position. So what did you notice from the offensive line? I mean, from what you were able to see, everything going on. You saw Cody Ford still lining up at right tackle.
John Feliciano was at right guard. Mitch Morrison center, obviously. That guy's not moving anywhere.
No.
Unless he's hurt. The left guard was Quentin Spain. The left tackle was still Keon Dawkins. In the first run install that they did, it looked like the defense ate him up when they went to, they were doing the handoffs and pulled up the middle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when they started doing the off tackle runs, they were just
damn.
And I don't think it's because the defense is bad. I think it's because the offensive line is good.
Well, that's encouraging.
And the other cool thing that I noticed them doing was last year, if you remember, they rotated so much with the offensive line that I think it seemed like it gave them the lack of continuity was fairly obvious. But this today, from what I saw anyway, it was the same five. Aside from that last 11-on-11 period, they swapped them. It looked like Dawkins was gassed. And Spain, they took them both out. And they moved NCK, I hope I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, yeah.
The left
Zeki and CK.
And then the left guard was Spencer Long.
Oh, cool.
So I feel like there's your top seven right there.
Yeah.
Probably carrying eight, maybe a nine. Because you've got CK can play left tackle, he can play guard.
He's just wing tackle.
You've got Feliciano can play guard, can play center. You've got Long can play guard, can play center. And I've always been a less is more guy
with
offensive linemen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like last year, they were keeping 9 or 10, always kind of gave me an eye twitch. But if they could cut that down to 8.
You're in good shape, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Spencer Long take a few snaps with the ones. In center.
Oh, okay.
At center. And I was like, what's happening here? And I think it was just to switch it out. Just get him more reps because if he spends all his time at left guard or right guard, he doesn't have a chance to.
Right.
That's what's good about it. A lot of this seems like it hasn't changed since day one in training camp.
Yeah.
The starters for the most part.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting. So talk about having a press pass and being like in that area with like, because I'm one of those guys that I always follow like all these guys with Matt Breno, you know, Matthew Fairburn, Joe Viscalli. So when I see those guys on the time, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. They're like small celebrities to me, you know. And
I felt like I was living someone else's life, to be honest. Like I was sitting there. I mean, I was telling you before.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there in my own little hole, and all of a sudden, somebody's sitting next to me that looks to my right, and it's Sal Capaccio, and kind of like give me a head nod. And I'm like,
yeah.
And then like comes in late, like one of the other guys sat down next to me, and I'm like, oh Jesus, I'm like, I know this guy.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I'm looking around, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know these guys' articles for like 100 years. It's
pretty cool.
Serious, like, fanboying going on. One of my, a guy that I teach with actually is a Cuba Lake guy. So I was telling him, because he's big, big Western New York.
Oh, yeah.
Buddy, you would die.
You'd die. Oh, yeah.
Sitting here doing this. You would absolutely die. And I sent him a couple of pictures, and he was like, I want to kill you.
I want to be you.
Yeah.
I want to have your life right now.
Yeah. But I mean, just when Matt said it to me, I was like, you know, it's not practical to drive, because like, I'll say it how my wife said it to me. She goes, you're going to be in the car for 9 hours to go watch a bunch of dudes in shorts throw a ball around in practice, not a game, practice. She, Allen Iverson, and me, basically. And I was like, yeah, honey, that's exactly what I'm going to do. She's like, all right, cool. You want to do it? That's fine.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, all right.
My wife's the same way. She's like, you're going to training camp practice today. Like, yeah, absolutely. I haven't been in a few years. It's like, okay, well, how long are you going to be there till? I'm like, I have no idea how long it lasts.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be there till it ends. Probably going to grab something to eat after. You know, it's just a different, sort of fandom.
Yeah.
To want to, and what's cool is, at some point I'd like to talk about like the training camp experience, because there's a lot of people who are listening to the podcast, a lot of readers to the Buffalo Roman site that have never been to practice, have seen pictures, don't really know the experience, but have been to games. It's kind of an interesting like little place. I mean, it's a nice little college university.
Yeah. The whole life, the drive in, I'm looking around, and I'm like, my God, these houses are incredible. Yeah, the whole neighborhood is awesome. The campus is gorgeous. Like it was great.
It's a beautiful little area. So, if people go there, you can't necessarily go in. So, were you able to get, like, a parking spot and all that stuff? Okay.
Yeah, and it's funny because I didn't quite know, you know, where I was going, and Matt didn't quite know where he had to send me.
Yeah.
So, I went to the Will Call tent. The Will Call people weren't even there yet because I was, you know, being the nerd on the first day of school. I'm like...
7 o'clock, were you there 7?
8 on the dot.
8 on the dot for 9:45 practice.
8 on the dot for 9:45 practice. Because I thought... Thought I was going to have to go through security and all these other things.
Oh, yeah.
But also, I go to the Will Call, or the guy who was there, he goes, no, actually, you got to go to this other lot. Go to the other lot. We're walking into the hall, and I see this one guy. I'm like, hey, you know, can I go pick up my credentials? And he goes, yeah, sure. So I figure I have to need, like, some escort. Go in there, and the girl goes, what's your name? Sean Murphy. He goes, all right, here you go. Is there anything else? He goes, nope, see you later. I'm like, okay, it's 8:15. Here we go.
I thought I was going to be in a line.
I thought something crazy was going to happen, but nope.
So very cool. So do you have a dorm there, too, to, like, write, or where did you write your article?
I ended up at the cafeteria over there, yeah. So the air-conditioned cafeteria, which, you know, for Sean Murphy, clearly I need to get out of the sun after 15 minutes. So I'm sitting there, and I felt like I was going to drop. So I go in there, and I AC's on, a couple cold water bottles.
Nice.
They serve lunch. I mean, I literally, it was like the VIP experience that I never had. It was crazy.
That's cool.
It was crazy. And like I said before, the hardest thing was, like, Alan throws a beautiful pass. I want to just scream out, start clapping. But, like, I got all these, like, local media legends sitting over here where if I say something, it's like... Who is this amateur?
I know. Well, that's funny because I think eventually that's going to change. It's going to be more Sean Murphy's on the field at some point, you know, like,
that's
because.
A scary story.
But I mean, you know, like we're talking about, you know, not as many blogs getting press coverage passes, and it's like eventually that's the way people are gaining a lot of their content. Now they still go to like WGR 550, they still go to Buffalo News, the DNC, of course, but they're making room for like The Athletic. And The Athletic's not a printed newspaper at all.
No, yeah.
And it's great content. All three of their writers are there.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Fairburn just went to The Athletic, right?
Like Biscaglia.
Oh, Biscaglia. That's
Biscaglia,
the one.
Yes,
and he was there, too. Yeah.
Yeah, Biscaglia, Fairburn.
Yes.
Tim Graham was there.
Yes,
saw.
Yeah. All of those guys were there. Biscaglia's tall.
Yeah. Oh, he's a giant.
Like I said, I'm not a short person, and he walked by me, and I stood on my toes.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, a lot of those guys. It's funny. I made fun of Joe once in a tweet because there was like a video of him holding a microphone from like 10 feet away, like just like getting in the quote. And I'm just like, his wingspan is enormous.
Go
catch it hard. Yeah. And he's like, you know, that's what us tall people have to do. He's like, the tall life. Didn't ask for it. So. But yeah, that's cool. You saw all the, like for me, like I remember the first time I saw Joe B, like walking out, like this is like 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, I listened to, I think he was still with WGR 550. I listen every morning, this and that. And yeah, it's funny, like just fans like us, but also like writers and stuff like that, just getting, and it's kind of cool.
It's very weird. Yeah.
Especially the people you respect and admire.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's some, like, I had a, Sal Marano wrote this basically like reference book called Relentless of the first 35 years of the history of the Bills team. You know, I have that entire book memorized. I've read that thing a bajillion times, and like I'm standing next to that guy on the field practice wise, so I'm like, like don't say anything, don't trip, don't say something stupid, just stand there and be professional.
Something he's had to do for like the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah,
right?
And I have to do it for 2 hours and I can't.
Oh, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So Josh Allen looked great. The receivers looked great. Now, Robert Foster came down on one of those throws. Looked like he might have been banged up a little bit, but he came back into the practice.
Yeah, it made me nervous for a minute, but any time a guy lays out, he gets, you think, shoulder. But, I mean, he must have just knocked the wind out of himself or something. It looked like it was pretty much a non-issue, thankfully.
Exhausted
knocks came off towards the end.
Okay.
Which I missed it, but there were some other guys tweeting about it. It was a hamstring.
Oh.
So that's and Kroom is already out with the hamstring, and you're already down Croft.
Croft is in a walking boot still.
Right. The foot. So now he already had, you know, two rookies in Lee Smith as your trio there of the tight ends, which now, I mean, you're looking at the only other two healthy tight ends on the roster, Nate Becker, who's another undrafted rookie, and Keith Tobridge, who Buffalo had last year as an undrafted rookie, released him, went to Tennessee, they released him, Buffalo brought him back. So
that's cool. It's good talking to somebody that did the 90 players in 90 days, because you know
it helps.
I'm looking at these numbers. I'm like, I don't recognize that guy. I don't. And you, I know, like maybe like the top 50 or 60, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, it's kind of a blur for me.
There's a couple of them who screwed me up, and they have new rock. Like every time I saw 87, I'm like, who is this guy? He keeps making plays over there, and I kept thinking it was Isaiah McKenzie, but it was Cam Phillips.
Oh yeah.
And he looked good today. I thought like every he didn't get a whole bunch of reps. He didn't get a ton of looks, but that kid's hands looked solid.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's a guy if they can sneak on somewhere and let him hang out, that's a good keep.
Yeah.
For that. David Sills is another.
David Sills looked good
guy.
Today. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that guy, hands catcher.
Yeah.
If that's what you want. And then my favorite receiver of the day was Duke Williams.
Oh, really?
Because he was trying to kill guys every time he had the ball, and I respect that. I mean, that guy was a heat-seeking missile. Like, he had the ball in his hands. He's twice the size of all the defensive backs. So they're trying to wrap him up, and he's like, F you, I'm not letting you wrap me up. He dropped shoulders in the dudes. Like,
that was
a pad popper every time he touched the ball.
Now, what number is he? Because I there was no media guide or anything, so I couldn't find out.
He's 82.
82, okay. Yeah, that's who I was watching. Okay.
Yeah. Big fella.
I'm like, is this guy a tight end over there? Like, what is...
And I said it before. I thought Nick Easley was a tight end at one point, because he's only, as a slot guy, he's listed at 5'11", 200 pounds, but he looks bigger than that. Like, and I thought, I kept getting him and Tommy Sweeney confused.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at him. But Sweeney's a mammoth. I walked by that guy, and he's, that's wild.
What do you think? So if Dawson Knox misses any time, does it become Lee Smith? Lee Smith's got to become the starter, right? Just for a veteran. I mean, you can't expect a seventh round rookie to come in as a starting tight end.
It's crazy because the kid, like, he looked good, Sweeney. Like, I mean, he showed some agility. I mean, he's got some leaping ability. His hands look soft. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if I'm guessing, like, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly with what Dave All wants to do, if he doesn't have this dynamic receiving threat, whether that be Knox or Kroon or Croft available, I think he'd rather make the tight end a sixth offensive lineman and let him just keep protect.
Yeah.
And then just let the other weapons do their work.
That would make sense. I mean, you definitely, especially with Josh Allen being a quarterback, protect him as much as you can. Keep him, give him confidence. And he looked good stepping into the pocket. I feel like that's something we haven't seen from a lot of Bills quarterbacks in the past. They would either try to scramble around the edge like a Tyrod, or just never step in. Like, you're always supposed to climb the pocket, and that's what they always teach you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, the two best quarterbacks, you know, like, other than Jim Kelly, have been Tyrod and Flutie, I would say. And both of them weren't climb the pocket guys. They were get out wide guys. Probably because they were, you know, not 6 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah, so for them, Allen is so big. And if you do let him get outside of the pocket, it's the crazy. But he's like 2004 Madden Michael Vick.
Yeah.
Basically. But in real life, like, the dude could fly. I mean, did you, when they were running the situational drill at the end of practice, they ran kind of like the naked boot with him.
Yep.
And he picked up the 20 yards, and it's like, he was running, but it looked completely effortless.
Yep.
Like everything
like a
else
jog.
That he does. Yeah, I mean, when he throws a ball, it's effortless.
Effortless.
Like, between him and Tyree Jackson, too, like, they have bazookas for arms. And then it almost makes me respect a guy like Matt Barkley that much more, because the ball just fires out of Allen and Jackson's hands. And then you watch Barkley, and it doesn't.
It doesn't.
And it's not like that guy doesn't have a strong arm. It's just those two have all-world arms.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes Barkley look like a noodle arm.
Exactly. When he really is just probably average, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a noodle arm. Like, that guy's got a cannon compared to me.
Yeah.
But just compared to a guy like Allen, who's throwing the ball hard, and Jackson, who's throwing the ball hard, Barkley's anticipation is so good with everything. So it's watching those other dudes, those like freakish athletic specimens like Allen, is crazy.
Yeah. So we mentioned Allen having a really good practice today. What about Matt Barkley and Tyree Jackson? I mean, I feel like Tyree Jackson barely got any reps.
Barely, yeah. And I mean, I saw him make a couple of rookie mistakes. Like, and one of them, I think it might have actually been Duke Williams got mad because Jackson could have climbed the pocket and fired the ball, but instead he tried to get out wide. And I think it was Shaq Lawson or somebody got to him and got the sack. And he saw Williams coming back to the huddle, you know, with both hands waving, like, just throw the darn ball. But Barkley, I mean, I saw Barkley throw a lot of really nice touch passes. Barkley uses underneath guys well. He did try to stretch the field going down there. I don't think he was successful on most of the downfield throws.
Yeah.
Gosh, Jackson hit somebody deep in the far left corner of the end.
It wasn't Andre Roberts, was it?
I don't think it was Roberts.
It was somebody. He definitely, yeah, I remember.
It might have been Cam Phillips.
Cam Phillips, okay.
Yeah, because I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, wow, Isaiah McKenzie just made a great catch. And then I flip, I'm like, no, that's not Isaiah McKenzie. So I think it might have been Phillips. But
yeah.
He fired one in there, too. So it's another one where, like, if you can sneak that kid onto a practice squad,
yeah.
That would be nice. But I have a bad feeling that they're going to have to keep him on the 53.
I know.
Because somebody will poach him.
I know.
Try to do the same.
Oh, I'd love to have him as a developmental. I was talking with my buddy Mike, who's a co-host during the season, and I'm like, if they imagine you have Josh Allen, your franchise quarterback, or what you hope is your franchise guy. You have a very steady backup in Matt Barkley where he can win you games.
Yep.
You hope if Allen goes down.
Yeah.
And then Tyree Jackson, this developmental prospect that maybe when Barkley moves on as a backup, you have him as a backup, or he steps in. Same physical traits as Allen.
Yes.
I don't know, intelligence-wise, maybe he's smarter, maybe he's not. I don't know how well he can pick up a playbook, but, man, the specimen that he is, I mean, if he can learn to step up in the pocket, and Josh Allen is probably learning that for the first time also, because he didn't have a center that could hold the
No, he didn't have a pocket.
He didn't have a pocket.
There was no pocket. He was running for his life at points last year.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jackson, too, at worst with him, you could do like the Packers used to do when they had Brett Favre, and they would just, you know, hey, let's take a flyer on this Mark Brunell guy and let's just develop him. Let's take a flyer on this Matt Hasselbeck guy and develop him and turn him into draft picks, cash him in on down the road. So you've got a couple options.
We talked, like, in the offseason on the podcast. One of our things, which isn't very common, is always draft a quarterback every year.
Yeah.
At some point. Not early, obviously, if you think you have a franchise.
Right.
But just take a flyer on a guy.
Why not?
And this year, I'm like, Tyree Jackson, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Next year, if they do on a fifth or sixth round pick or whatever, and you just find out. You have 90 roster spots.
Yeah.
Is he better than Tyree Jackson or not?
Right.
If he is, you keep that.
Right.
Like you said, if not, they turn into trades.
And
like,
is he better than Matt Barkley? Too is the other thing.
That's true.
Even though Barkley, I think he's on a 2-year deal. I don't remember exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, so like you have him for next year if you want him.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you don't.
That's it. Yeah. For the first time in I don't know how many years, our quarterback room is finally stable.
Well, I feel like a lot of things are stable for the first time in a long time. I mean, you have two guys, a GM and a head coach, who are actually on the same page.
Same page, yeah.
We can say what we want, but, I mean, they work together in Carolina, and then McDermott gets hired, and then Whaley gets fired, and then magically a guy that McDermott worked with in Carolina ends up with GM.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been a completely random coincidence and a completely random search.
The search was one person, and it was Brandon Bean.
Yeah, right? I mean, and it seems like it's the right guy to do it. I mean, and when you have the same plan and you have the same vision, it makes everything a lot easier when you've got those two guys. And I mean, clearly, like, Doug Marrone and Doug Whaley didn't have the same vision.
No. Shane Daly and Buddy Nix kind of did, but it was the wrong vision.
I feel bad because I feel like Chan Gailey would be the perfect offensive coordinator.
Yes.
But, I mean, Brian Daboll is the perfect offensive coordinator for what they have. And I'm pumped about him, but I feel like he's going to be a head coach very soon.
I think so.
His offense does well.
Yeah, the offense does well.
But like, if Gailey had the talent that this particular group has, I think they could have been in a lot better shape yeah. at points. Because, I mean, that group was so fun to root for because you had a seventh-round draft pick as a quarterback, an undrafted free agent running back who was in, you know, NFL Europe. You had a receiving core headed by a seventh-round,
yep, as your wide receiver one.
Undrafted dudes. And Scott Chandler was an afterthought with Dallas before he came over to Buffalo. So you've got all these guys who were, it was literally like, yeah, what is that Keanu Reeves movie? The Replacements.
The Replacements,
That's what it was.
Yes.
Like, you know, and Gene Hackman and Champ Bailey almost kind of look like distant cousins. I mean, and then even before that, I mean, Russ Brandon, not a GM.
Yep.
Marv Levy, great head coach,
not a GM. No.
I mean, I feel like Tom Donahoe did a really good job picking up players, but he did a terrible job picking coaches.
Yeah, yeah. And drafting. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they had so many.
The draft was bad.
Drafts were
Pro
bad.
Pro free agency, excellent.
Yeah,
draft,
yeah, free agency.
Terrific.
Yes.
Offensive line, worst I've ever seen. I don't know if you thought it would be a good idea to have a statue for a quarterback and then say, let's just, you know, tag an offensive line. Drew Bledsoe.
Are you talking to Drew Bledsoe?
Yeah.
Wait, but in Drew Bledsoe's year, didn't they try to sign, was that Langston Walker? Oh, no, was that later? Langston Walker, Derek Dockery. It might have been after. It might have been after.
I thought that was Levy. You could be right, and I could be wrong.
That was Levy. Oh, yeah, you're right. But Levy was after. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
You're right.
That
might have been J.P. Losman.
I think
or
was like the Losman, and then the oops, we're actually going to play Trent Edwards.
Trent Edwards, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So much dysfunction. It's hard to keep it straight.
It really, yeah. It's like a trail of tears. Looking at a whole bunch of it going back.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the good things I like about this offseason, especially for us Bills fans, is they lost legitimately nobody to free agency. Nobody of note.
Right.
Now, they lost Kyle Williams to retirement, which is tough.
Yeah.
But they replaced him with first-round pick at Oliver.
Yeah.
And which, for right now, is, you know, looking like a really good,
I mean,
good replacement.
Arguably, they replaced him with a better player in the moment.
In the moment.
They didn't replace him with a better leader. They didn't. You
no.
can't replace him, period, in the locker room, full stop. Like, that guy's the beating heart of the team.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of the future for that spot, Oliver, I think, is going to be, I mean, that's a man. That is a man.
He looked really good. Now, did you notice, someone pointed out on Twitter, I don't know if you caught that Embedded series. Have you seen that at all?
I didn't.
So the Bills released the Embedded series,
yeah.
Season 2. And there was one play where Ed Oliver jumped. It was in OTAs, and Ed Oliver jumped offside. And so they blew the whistle, they started moving back, and Ed Oliver was kicking himself for it, right? He was like, man, Sean McDermott went, pulled him aside, is like, hey, you know, we got to, and Ed Oliver kind of turned away, not as a sign of disrespect, but as a, man, I need to check Lawson, takes him, and spins him around, and has him face the coach as McDermott is talking to
That's
him.
Good stuff.
Exactly, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, that was just like, again, not disrespectful, probably just immaturity, not
right.
used to being in a pro level.
Yeah.
He's used to being the best guy on a team. He's not right now.
Yeah, and that speaks to the kind of culture that the team has, that they always say that when it's the coach doing that kind of stuff all the time, the team is never going to get any better. But it's when the players start policing other players that it goes. So for Lawson to be mature enough to essentially spin around and be like, kid, get over here and take your medicine, and I don't care how mad you are, shut up and look at him when he talks to you. That's where it's at.
And that makes me excited for the leadership within the locker room, that you don't necessarily, because no one would ever choose Shaq Lawson necessarily as a leader.
Yeah.
But you see small things like that, and you're like, these guys are all mini leaders all around the team.
Yes.
We just don't know about them.
Right.
And
yeah.
Not all Lorenzo Alexanders.
Right.
Or,
Which, by the way, I mean, speaking of Alexander and Gore, are both 36 years old.
Yeah.
And, like, looking at them, if you told me they were 26 and I didn't know anything about them, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah, like, I mean, both of them are just in unbelievably good shape. But it's crazy.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, Alexander moves so quick, and Gore still is he's going to get 3 yards every single time, at least. I mean, sometimes he'll get 8. Maybe he'll break one out for 15, but, I mean, you're not taking him down before he gets 3 yards.
Now, we talked about not being excited when Devin Singletary was picked. How were you? What did you feel like when Frank Gore was, you know, signed as a free agent.
The guy who texted me, I thought he was kidding with me.
Right?
Yeah, I thought because they already had Ivory and McCoy, so why do you have the two of the three oldest running backs in the league? Like, let's make it a trio. And I saw it, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you need to get younger in the position. You don't need to get older in the position. This is dumb. But he fits the offense. He fits the offense.
What about LeSean McCoy? How did LeSean McCoy look today as far as did he look like the old LeSean McCoy? Or did he look like he lost his stuff? I mean, how do you look in comparison to, like, even a Devin Singletary?
I thought he looked good.
Did he?
To be honest, I mean, and watching him catch the ball, they were experimenting with this formation a lot of times where Allen was in the gun. They had the three tight ends bunched to the left side off the left tackle. They had a receiver in the slot. It was Andre Roberts quite a few times, and then they had a back. It was McCoy lined out wide. Brought McCoy back into the backfield. Snapped the ball. Roberts ran a slant, and then McCoy ran a wheel out of the backfield.
Yep.
And Allen just dropped it right on him. Each time, whichever running back it was on there when they were doing it without the defense, just kept dropping it on him. But then McCoy did it against the defense, and you could see he still had that extra gear to get under the ball, get to it, get a couple extra yards on the corner before he could really get an angle on him. Like, I've been pretty hard on McCoy all season.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been beating the drum pretty hard to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And I'll own that. And watching it today, I think he's actually pretty prime to be a bounce back type guy.
It was because he spoiled the Avengers game. Or
oh, 100%.
I love how people throw that out. Like, that's the only reason you could possibly not like LeSean McCoy. I know.
Yeah.
I know. You know, I've had people tell me on Twitter, so like you, I've kind of been hard on McCoy, not because I haven't been appreciative of I think he's the best running back since probably before Fred Jackson. Since maybe even Thurman Thomas or maybe, I don't know, Marshawn Lynch was a good one. Different type of running back, but... And with the way that he performed last year, I mean, he was 40th in rushing in the entire league.
It was bad.
He fought some injuries. He had a terrible offensive line. But my sticking point was always like, well, Chris Ivory always had a better yard per carry. Chris Ivory's not that good.
Right.
So how do you, I don't know, with the money he's making too, there's some level of expectation. He was making a lot of excuses. He wasn't taking the blame. He wasn't leading.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see how he... Now, if he returns to 2017 with Sean McCoy, his $9 million cap, it is all worth it, right?
Absolutely.
Every penny.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, if he's not, then all of a sudden you make room for a T.J. Yeldon, like you said. He absolutely makes the roster. And Frank Gore becomes your lead running back. Devin Singletary...
Right.
He switches in with Devin Singletary depending on the occasion.
You may not necessarily need a lead running back.
Yeah.
I mean, Seattle has been an example of having three or four different dudes. I mean, to the disdain of every fantasy football player
it's the worst
in the world who thinks Chris Carson's going to have a great year. No, it'll be Mike Davis. No, it'll be, who was the, there was a guy from Notre Dame.
Who was
in there?
Who was
it?
Rashad
Procise.
Oh, yeah, Procise, yep.
Yeah. I hang out with one of my really good buddies. This is a Notre Dame guy. He's always like, CJ Procise is going to be the guy. I'm like, he plays with Pete Carroll. He's not going to touch the ball.
And then you said it.
The Rashad Penny, that was the other guy, the commissioner of my fantasy football league. He's like, Rashad Penny, I'm taking him in the first round. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like, it's not going to work out. But that's, I mean, look at them, though. They're consistently good, and that offense is consistently good. With a mobile quarterback, without one lead bell cow running back, and without one distinct number one wide receiver.
But with, it's almost like that's how the New England's done it with Brian Daboll, right? Brian Daboll came from New England. They just, different running backs. They don't have a...
And it might be by the matchup. Like, maybe one team doesn't do well against guys who dance and who break outside. Okay, so then McCoy gets the ball a lot that day.
Yeah.
Maybe other teams don't do well against guys who just pound the rock and go north and south. Gore gets it a lot that day. Maybe there's teams who can work a little cutback and get some backside stuff on them. Then Singletary gets the ball a lot that game. And then maybe there's guys who it's like none of these linebackers can cover anybody out of the backfield. There's Yeldon. boom, you have four dudes who are going to be okay. And it's, you don't necessarily need to lean on one of them, especially when, you know, one of your running backs is 96 and the other one is 45. So it's, you can help those two out.
Age-wise.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm really excited to see where this season goes. This is the most excited I've been in a little while. Now, I'm always optimistic. We always have to be.
Yep.
But you have to figure, so Vegas odds are 6.5 wins. Like, okay. It's got to be above
that's
that, right?
That's like a steal for the over.
Right?
It's a steal. I mean,
barring an injury, even in Josh Allen, like I feel like they might be able to go 7-9 with Matt Barkley.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, that. Looking at it, if you split the division, you know, I mean, say you lose to New England twice, and then you beat the Dolphins twice, and you split with the Jets. There's three right there, so 6.5. You're telling me that they had it after that? They can't go.
They can't win
four.
Yeah, no, no kidding, right? Exactly.
Get out.
Come on.
Yeah, that's, I mean, even the least optimistic of us would think they'll be able to beat somebody. I mean, the Giants. The Giants are. I heard on WGR. Worked out Kelvin Benjamin.
Yes.
You know you're reaching a new level of desperation when you're working that guy out.
Can we just say week two is a win right there then automatically against the Giants?
Well, I mean, I'm going to the game.
Are you going to the Giants game?
Well, it's at Meadowlands.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
That's for me, that's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So one of my best friends is a Giant fan. So we've gone to, I think we've been at every Buffalo Giant game.
Well, cool.
Regardless of the venue, since... I think we missed one since 1996.
No kidding.
Yeah, we've been to almost all of them.
Wow. Even in Buffalo, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I took him up when the Giants beat him, son of a gun, because it was...
Was it the Kavika Mitchell one? Where he ran back the touchdown?
Remind me about that.
Okay.
I got a story about that one.
Okay.
But, no, it was Tyrod just had a terrible game in there. And I can't... Eli Manning... The Giants got a touchdown late... I don't remember much of the game. I might have had a few too many blues
in
the parking lot. But it was tight.
Yeah.
It was tight for a while, and all of a sudden, Buffalo. No, the Kavika Mitchell game, I got a buddy of mine who is like the Hex. And when Buffalo's up, and it started the Music City Miracle game.
Oh, really?
So we were in eighth grade. He calls me after Christie makes the field goal to go up one, and it's 2000, so there's no cell phones.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking on a corded telephone in my parents' kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, millennials listening, children have no idea what I'm talking about.
You had to actually dial and, like, remember numbers?
Uh-huh, yeah.
What?
Well, this system.
Yeah.
Back in my day. But so I'm talking to him, and he's like, dude, I can't believe that they just beat the Titans. This is incredible. But, like, I know this defense is so good, they might work the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I hear my father inventing curse words that I've never heard before or since. Like, and I, Eddie, my buddy, just goes, I think I'm going to go. All right, buddy. Bye. Hangs up, and I go, yeah, what happened? He's like, they just threw a forward lateral, blah, 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 blah. So then the Kavika Mitchell thing happens because Buffalo's up 14-0, and I had busted his chops about it. He'd done it to me one other time. He was like, I'm a White Sox fan, so he did it during a no-hitter when Mark Burley was throwing one. And he was like, hey, he's throwing another no-hitter, and then the next batter, single. So then... He sends me a text message, and he goes, can I call you for a minute? And I send him back, and I'm like, do not even do it. So the phone rings, I pick up, I said, I hate you. He goes, man, I can't believe the Bills beat the Giants. And from that point forward, Buffalo's up 14-0, they lose 28-14. So this man is the actual Hex in there. So no, the Kavika Mitchell game I was not at, that's the one we missed.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. Hey, I'm going to pause that if that's okay. Let's grab another beer.
Please.
I want to bring up the conversation about being downstate, how you became a Bills fan and all that stuff, because
perfect.
I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah.
So here, listeners won't be able to tell the difference. I'm going to hit the pause button. Boop.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So, cheers, men. We're back with a beer after the pause. Thanks again for doing this. Sean Murphy from BuffaloRumblings.com. Absolutely. So, Sean, you're a Bills fan. You're from downstate. How did you become a Bills fan in general?
Fun story, my dad, both my parents grew up on Long Island, and with stone's throw to a bar that the Jet players used to go to all the time at training camp. And so my parents both lived in Jets. My mother, especially, because she said when she used to go to the bar, they were pigs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just awful. This is like Richard Todd, Gastineau, like all of those guys in there. She can't stand it.
Uh-huh.
So my father was at... I think that the game that Marty Lyons, he's given him the business down there. I'm pretty sure that game was at the Meadowlands. Right?
Okay.
I think it was, and I'm pretty sure my father was at it. Uh-huh. Watched Kelly bash Lyons over the head with the football and was like, oh my God, I love this guy.
Yeah.
And my dad was a Cowboys fan.
Oh, really? Growing up
through the 70s because he just loved Roger Staubach. He loved Tom Landry. He loved what they represented. He saw Kelly and he was like, that's my guy.
Really?
I love this dude. And that's, I mean, I got into many fights on the playground defending my honor.
Really?
Are
you a Bills fan?
I am, like, when you say, like, you probably have a token fan of, like, you know, whatever team up around here. Like, there might be a token Browns fan around here, or, like, a token Steelers fan. Like, I am my friend who's a token Bills fan. So, like, anytime the Buffalo does anything, my phone blows up. And it's like... The one that I can remember in recent history is when they drafted C.J. Spiller. Yeah. Because I just remember getting text messages that were just long strings of ha, 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 ha. Like, they already have Marshawn Lynch and Fred Jackson. What are these morons doing? So that's me. So like my dad was a Bills fan. I got into it. Mm-hmm. First game I can remember watching was the comeback game. I was 6.
Wow,
and,
really?
And, well, it was right after Christmas.
Yeah.
So... when Reich throws the pick 6 to Bubba McDowell and it gets returned and they're down 35-3, my dad gets all pissed off. Said, that's it, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to take the Christmas decorations down. So he's outside working, and as they're scoring touchdowns, I'm banging on the window and I'm flashing him the score.
Oh, really?
But he comes back in and just screams at me, what are you doing? You're going to mess up the window. Blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, Dad, it's 35-24. And he thought I was lying because, you know, I'm 6.
Yeah.
So then he sees the score and he goes, holy shit, it's 35-24. And I mean, I didn't think Buffalo could lose because they had already been to the last two Super Bowls. Of course, they were going to go to another Super Bowl. I was 6.
Yeah.
So
it was all you knew.
Yeah, that's it. I knew
Super Bowl.
Buffalo goes to the Super Bowl. What do you mean? That's what happens.
Yeah.
So I was hooked. I mean, I am. It's funny to me to look now because my son is 5, my older boy, and if I try to have him watch a game, he doesn't call them the Bills, they're Buffaloes in our house. But he'll sit there and he'll go, Daddy, let's watch the Buffaloes. And I'll go, all right, Declan, let's do this. He goes, now we'll watch like 3 plays. And he goes, is it over?
Yes.
And I'm like, no, man, there's still a lot of time.
No, just your attention span is over, right?
So like for me, it's been 6 or 7, and I was watching whole games.
You look, and how impressive is that,
it
right?
It probably explains a lot about my, you know, just neuroses in general.
But yeah,
I was very into it at that point at a young age. I was hooked for that group.
Cool. Now, when did you become a writer for Buffalo Rumblings?
That was Rex Ryan was the coach. Gosh, I want to say that it was August of 16,
okay.
I think, because I was, I applied, it was my second application. The first time I applied was when Brian Galliford was the editor-in-chief. Matt was the assistant. And they were looking for They were looking for new writers. They were looking for contributors of any kind. And I think they had said that they wanted people who were into analytics, too.
Oh, okay.
I'm an English guy. I'm an English teacher, so I have nothing with analytics. And I emailed Brian, and I told him, hey, look, you know, I'm an English teacher. I have a master's in ed. I have an English bachelor's degree. At worst, I could be a good copy editor for you guys. And he very politely told me that they had already found what they were looking for and to go off. And that's they hired Dan LaVoy and Jeff Hunter at that point. And I very jealously would like read nothing. I was a complete you-know-what about
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah.
And then a few years later, when Brian was gone and Chris Trapasso was the editor, they put out another all-call and said to submit two writing samples. And I wasn't going to do it because I'd already been turned down once before.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife looked at me and was like, do it. I said, I don't think I'm going to. She goes, if you do a writing sample, they're going to hire you. So do it. And I said, okay, whatever you say. So I remember what I wrote about. I wrote about why they should let Robert Woods go in free agency. And they should sign, oh God, what was that terrible wide receiver for the Giants who dropped everything?
Oh, was it Reuben Randall?
Yes, it's exactly who it was.
Reuben Randall.
Yeah, sign Reuben Randall instead. Yeah, that's brilliant right there. And then the other thing.
Wait, are you sure you want me to keep this in the podcast?
Oh, yeah,
you don't want me to cut this?
No, I love owning when I make mistakes.
Yeah.
Like when readers point out things that I have screwed up in an article, I will gladly change it. Like, don't be a dick about it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I will gladly, like, hey man, I think you're wrong there. Oops, my bad.
Yeah.
110%. I don't understand people who will not, like, delete the tweet when it doesn't actually work out. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yep, yep.
Like, no, I thought that Robert Woods was going to be too expensive and they should let him walk. Oops.
Oops, yeah.
And then I projected the Tyrod Taylor contract, and I think that I said they would sign him to a 5-year deal at $90 million, and I was pretty much like dead on the contract thing. And it took like a month for them to answer me. So I just figured that not only did I not get hired, but that Chris was a jerk and he wasn't even going to email me. And then finally I got a message from him that was like, hey man, we read your stuff and it was really good, so we're going to take it. And
oh, nice.
I fucked out. The first article I wrote, actually, the first training camp recap was when Reggie Ragland blew his knee out. So I remember, and I thought, I'm like, yeah, I'm a hex. This is perfect. Like, put me on the training camp thing, and this guy, the second round pick, blows it out. Just ducky. But yeah, so that's, I was a staff writer at that point. And then, Matt, once Chris left and Matt took over as the editor, he just kind of kept throwing more responsibilities at me, and I like challenges.
Yeah.
Matt challenged me on a lot of it. He would look at me and say, hey, I like what you do. You can be better at it. Do it this way. Do it that way.
So he was like your Sean McDermott, is what you're saying.
He was, yes. No, yeah. Yeah, he did.
He's like, respect the process, Sean.
Yeah,
we'll
no,
get you the.
Yeah, he did. And he busted my chops about it, and it was good.
Cool.
I respond well to that kind of stuff. Because he looked at me and was like, you know, you can keep doing what you're doing, and, you know, just whatever. Or, you know, you could actually take advantage of it and keep working at it. And that's, because once Jeff left, I'm the assistant editor. I'm number three.
Yeah.
Since Matt, there's Dan, and there's me. And I just,
your assistant to the assistant to the editor.
So I get the coffee. that would be me.
That's cool. How do you find, like, the Buffalo Rumblings community as far as giving you feedback? I mean, it seems like, from what I've read, like, they seem to be really cool. Like, there's not a lot of jerks and just like, come on, Sean, what were you thinking there?
No, and there's a lot of really smart dudes.
A lot of smart dudes, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of smart. I'm sure there's a lot of smart dudettes, too, that I just don't know if they're male or female.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of people in there who are, they just know their stuff. I mean, and there's some guys you can always count on for great gifs, not gifs. There's always some dudes who you can count on for, like, you know, when you do make a mistake, there's always the one guy who's like, hey, you know what, man, I think you meant this. And there's always the guy who's like the debater. And I love the debaters.
Yeah.
Like, that's my favorite. Like, where you sit there and, like, you
constructive
know,
debating.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because that's the whole purpose of it.
Yeah.
Is to talk about it. And for me, there's no one to talk to about Bill stuff around me. They're all Giant fans. Or worse, they're Jet fans.
Yeah.
So I have to deal with all of that. Where guys are like, hey, what do you think about Eli Manning? Like, I don't care about Eli Manning. You know, what do you think about, you know, Eli Manning Jr., a.k.a. Daniel Jones? I'm like, I'm super happy that they picked him.
Yeah. because then we got Ed Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, like, you were mentioning the LeSean McCoy thing, and I've had people over Twitter that, like, you know, I've challenged. I love open debate as far as it's like, because I'm willing to change my mind. If you present a good opinion about something, it's like, I never thought about that, or you provide evidence. Like, right. People are like, oh, but the things that get me are when people are like, oh, like, I get it, so you like LeSean McCoy, but now he's terrible, you want to run him out of town. It's like, no, like, you can be a fan, a diehard fan, and question the team that you follow. You should never blindly follow your team, right? That's not what this country was built on. That's not what, like, good teams were built on, is never questioning. You can question McDermott after the first season, even though he made it to the playoffs. It doesn't.
The snow game, the blizzard game.
Yeah.
When they punted with 5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, we crucified Rex Ryan for doing the same exact thing against the Dolphins the year prior because it didn't work. When McDermott did it, it was a genius move. It was still a bad move.
It was still a bad move. Yeah.
We got lucky. That's what happened.
Exactly.
I mean, they got lucky multiple times.
That season in general. The game, that game specifically, for sure. Oh. That season in general, man.
Where were you when Dalton completed the pass to Tyler Boyd?
I was in my living room, and I was standing up because it was on TV, right? You know, because the Bills game had ended.
Yep.
They switched over and I'm just standing up, pacing like I normally do. Something big's supposed to happen. Yep. Game's on the line. I'm like, okay, Andy Dalton and the Bengals do not need this game whatsoever.
Yep.
They gain nothing by winning. And the Ravens almost picked it off right before. It was like, it wasn't an actual interception, but it was called back on a penalty.
Uh-huh.
And so, all of a sudden, like, my wife's on her phone. Like, she's like, kind of like a Bills fan to a Bills fan. Like, she supports me, but she'll never be as big of a Bills fan.
Same
with your wife?
Yeah. My wife was a Jet fan because her brother is a Jet fan.
Oh, okay.
And then she started dating me and was like, well, if I don't want him to be miserable every single week, I guess I'll look for you guys.
Yeah, so she was just kind of on her phone. She didn't know the ramifications of everything, and I didn't explain it fully, but I'm standing there, and I see it happen, and he gets the first down. I'm like, this is great. Then he scores a touchdown, and I scared her at how much I screamed. Luckily, my children were in bed, but, like, I was just like, yeah, you know. It was incredible. What about you? Where were you?
We were at a New Year's Eve party with my buddy Ed the Hacks, and I'm sitting there holding our, at the time, he was 8 months old. And Eddie is 6'5", about 270.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, and we're standing, and I'm watching. I'm like, ah, damn it. You know what? At least Buffalo did all they could do. They got close. And when the pass was completed, he and I both started jumping and screaming. And then we're hugging each other while jumping and screaming.
Yeah.
And my kid is in the middle of us. And he's just taking it. He's like wide-eyed.
What
is going on? And my wife goes, are you done? And he goes, give me the baby. And then we're sprinting around his house.
Yeah.
Like, she looked at me and she goes, I did not realize that was going to be that kind of reaction for you. I'm like, well, what did you think you were married to?
She didn't realize how big of a... That was the biggest play in the last 20 years. You know, for us as fans.
Yeah.
And that's funny that there's 2 6-foot-plus guys, and there's an 8-month-old between you two while you guys are bro-hugging.
Jumping and screaming like prepubescent girls at, like, an NSYNC concert. It was ridiculous how nuts we were. And he's a Giant fan.
Yeah. And he was still...
He was just pumped for me.
I love Giants fans. They're super cool.
All of my buddies who are Giant fans are all rapping. He's also a home brewer, this guy. And we did... we brewed a beer that season. It was my idea. We did it. It was an apple bourbon porter that we made. And he goes, what do you want to call it? And I go, trust the process. And he goes, come on. I said, no, that's what we're going to call it. I said, you wanted it. And he goes, let's call it Murphy's process. I go, no. It's McDermott's process, but we're going to trust him. Trust the process. He goes, whatever you said.
Uh-huh.
And that was flowing when we scored.
Nice. I remember, have you ever done this? So my firstborn was born in November, so right in the peak of football season. I remember holding him the week after he was born. It was football Sunday. It was probably like 3 days after he was born. I'm holding him, and he's, you know, asleep or whatever. Or I was feeding him or whatever. And I forget how loud I get watching TV. And I remember, like, not screaming, but raising my voice. And he just went from, like, crying, from completely calm and normal to, like, crying because of this loud noise. And I felt so terrible. I felt like an awful father and human being. But I'm like, you know what? He's got to get kind of used to that.
There's that story, I feel like, in every, like, my dad always tells me, he's a Red Sox fan. So when the 86 ALCS, Boston is down or whatever, and I was sleeping, and Dave Henderson hit a walk-off home run in the seventh game to beat the Angels and send Boston to the World Series. And they're in a little, it's just me and him in a little apartment. And he goes, and I just, like, start up and start screaming, crying, and he's running around the apartment.
It's okay.
And that's kind of the same thing. Like, with my firstborn, because it was just my wife and I and him, we would go, we took him to the same sports bar, Sweeney's in Walden, New York, and we're plugged down there.
Yeah.
But we would always go to watch the Bills games at that spot. So when he was, you know, 2 months old, he'd be in the carrier, he'd be asleep, we'd bring him, somebody'd score a touchdown, somebody'd yell, he'd jump. But he's such a calm, easygoing kid now because he's used to the noise, I think.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Crazy. So, training camp, again, you're going to be there Sunday, tomorrow?
Yeah, going tomorrow.
Is there anything different that you're going to be looking for that you didn't look for today? Or
I want to look at more of the defense. I focus so much on the offense, and it's like the shiny new toys.
Oh, of course.
You know, we're all on the offense. But I think tomorrow I really want to take a better look because I put it out there on the recap that I wrote, just things to look at. Guys were asking me about the defensive line rotation, and, like, I didn't really pay attention to it. I mean, I know that I saw Oliver out there with the ones a little bit more, or at least I thought I did, because, I mean, I saw him lining up next to Latulalay rather than lining up next to Harrison Phillips all the time. But I saw it. I mean, McDermott is a heavy rotation guy anyway. Tremaine Edmonds was out there, so a lot of Julian Stanford today, too, which that was a guy who, in my 90 for 90, rumbling, I was thinking that he may be one of those back cut types if they really like the youngins. Also weird, when they did the field goal stuff at the end, the guy lining up the defense on the field goal was Tyrell Dodson, an undrafted rookie.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought that was interesting, because that's also, that he was the guy who was arrested on suspicion of domestic violence at one point, too. So I had thought that his days were numbered, but I haven't heard an update on that case. But it appears that the coaching staff, I mean, if they're trusting him to make the calls on there and line guys up, they apparently think highly of him ability-wise.
Now, what's his position there on the defense?
He's a linebacker.
He's a linebacker also.
53,
okay. So right now, I mean, you have your starters. You have Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, Lorenzo Alexander.
That's pretty much a given.
I mean, who do you have behind him right now on the making? I mean, one guy I liked that was brought up, that he came up to the one thing I liked about last season, even though it was pretty rough to watch at some points, is at some point they knew they weren't going to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They dumped a bunch of guys, and they brought some new guys up. So they brought Mike Love, they brought Corey Thompson, who I thought, from the limited action I saw, I thought he looked pretty good last year. And I was really excited they brought him up. What did you think?
He did. Athletically, that guy is solid. The poor kid got hurt so often in college that it was like, it's like if he got hurt on the middle school team, didn't play JV, and then all of a sudden, it was like, let's put you in a varsity game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's almost what happened to him last year. But athletically, like, for what McDermott seems to like in his backup linebackers, he loves those special teams types.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like you're going to have a guy like Stanford who's going to be there. You're going to have a guy like Lacey who's going to be there. Deshaun Joseph, I feel like, is...
Well, Deshaun, of course.
Who I didn't even notice today. And that's what I'm saying. I need to look at the defensive guys a little bit more because I didn't see Thompson today either.
Yeah.
at all. But, like, last year, I feel like you're right. He acquitted himself fairly well for a dude who was an undrafted rookie who had been hurt a ton, who had gone out there and played. I mean, I'm excited to see Milano get back in the lineup. Like, that guy's a little engine that could. I mean, just an undersized, heat-seeking missile.
Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. He might be, before Tremaine Edmonds got drafted, probably the best linebacker I remember seeing since London Fletcher.
Yes.
That speaks to how talented he is, but how bad, really, the linebacking had been. I mean, you're talking Greg Ellison. Remember that?
Oh, God.
I mean, it was just a run of free agents and just guys that just didn't fit.
Yeah, guys didn't fit, didn't work out. I mean, that was,
He's more athletic already than, like, Paul Posluszny
and
guys like that. I mean, Kiko, I remember being really excited about him at first.
Yep. Yeah, no, that was a good rookie year. He made some dumb mistakes, but yeah, and it's funny how he went from being, like, you know, the man in Buffalo to being public enemy.
To being hated, right? Right?
Buffalo, yeah.
We always talk about on this podcast, he's part of the piece of garbage club. so there's, like, certain players that meet this. There's very
on that Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Him, Jarvis Landry.
Jarvis Landry's on it. Also, take another guess. Guess who else is on it?
Oh God, let's see. It's Landry.
Landry's definitely top of it.
I don't even know.
Patriots.
Oh, God. You're going to put Brady on there?
No. I'm not going to put Brady on there just for being good. Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah.
For that cheap play. And then, obviously, like, from when we were kids, like Brian Cox.
Double-barreled middle fingers.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I also put Richard Sherman on for that cheap shot against Dan Carpenter.
Oh, yeah, that was brutal.
In that game that they could have won.
Yeah, that was brutal. And then for him to sit there in the interview and get out of my
head.
Yeah.
I don't see what was wrong. So, yeah, but to the point, yeah, he's...
There's a guy that leveled Stephen Hauschka last year, too.
Oh, Harry Anderson.
Henry Anderson?
Right? Harry Anderson, yes.
That was
from the Jets. Yes,
yeah,
that was.
Like, come on. Yeah, you're a brave guy.
And he defended it all day after that. I mean, they have to.
Oh, yeah.
They're never going to be like, well, I was really wrong on that. I wish I had done it, because then... but yeah, that ruined Hauschka's the second half of the season. Luckily, that didn't matter. Could you imagine if they were trying to make a playoff run and they needed a field goal to win a game? And he was injured because of that cheap shot?
Yep. Yeah, and luckily, I mean, that's been a big worry for a lot of people that injury was going to linger. And I don't know what you saw today, but from what I looked at with him kicking, I saw a healthy dude.
Yeah.
Like, that was Stephen Hauschka, not the dude who was wearing Stephen Hauschka's jersey.
Last year, yeah. And just playing for the pain. This guy is...
Yeah.
I mean, he is the best kicker we've had
in a while.
Maybe since Steve Christie.
Yeah.
I mean, because Lindell was always good, but never from far.
Exactly.
He wasn't reliable past, like, 45 yards.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yeah, which, I mean, in modern NFL, you kind of need to be.
Yeah,
you should be.
So those coaches would always, like, punt instead of kick field goals at, like, the 37. Like, come on.
Right.
You got to go for that 55-yard field goal.
I make that Madden all the time.
Oh, man. So, cool. Cool, so it's going to be an exciting day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you know what the weather's going to be like? Is it going to be nicer tomorrow?
I think it's going to be kind of more of the same from what I've seen.
Dude, I was sweating bullets and I was just like, wow, like this is, I don't remember it being like this. I mean, it must have been like 80 degrees by 10 o'clock.
I don't know. When I got back to my car, it said it was 91 when I got there. I don't know what it was on the turf, but I know that there was a point there towards the end of practice where I'm sitting there and I'm like, I should try to get in a scrum. And I'm like, I'm dizzy. I need water.
So you're looking for certain different things that you didn't see, obviously, today. There is so much to watch. Excuse me. Like you mentioned, everything's going on at once. There's literally almost 90 players doing something at any given time. And then sometimes they switch up fields, so you're looking at one side of Grounding Stadium in the field, the practice field, and then you're looking at the actual stadium itself.
Right.
And right, yes, today at least, the bleachers were set up for the practice field area on the side, not like the stadium area.
Right.
I don't know if that had to do with the natural grass. Maybe it's more similar to what they're going to see at New Era Field. I'm curious, but there's a lot of stuff. So it's that's why I love to hear what you're going to be looking at. Obviously, the offensive line is going to be a big thing.
Yes.
It looked like Levi Wallace, for the most part, was getting other first-team reps.
He was pretty much the only CB, too,
that
I saw. Yeah. I think Kevin Johnson got in there a little bit, but it was really... It seemed like it's Wallace's job to lose. And I'm not mad about that. If you go in there and you have White, Wallace, Tarrant, Aaron Johnson, Kevin Johnson, E.J. Gaines. That's pretty legit.
So much more talent than last season.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, you had the He Who Shall Not Be Named who retired at halftime.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, who's the guy? They played Ryan Lewis for a little bit. Not Macklemore's Ryan Lewis, but the Ryan Lewis.
Yep.
And then I was at the Titans game when they benched Lewis. Halfway through, and they started playing Phillip Gaines. I think this, my take on it was that Ryan Lewis against the run just seemed awful. Just didn't get to the edge, which I noticed on a couple. He seemed more physical today.
Like Ryan Lewis?
Yeah. I mean, but when I saw him in the one-on-ones, he was going out there. They were really working the jam of it. And it seemed like that was something where maybe they told him, like, if you actually want to stick, you might want to get a little bit more physical. I don't know if it's going to work out for him because they've got a guy like Zeron Neal. He's working out as a slot corner. So if you go with those five that we already said, if you keep Neal as a safety slash corner, then you've got obviously Poyer and Hyde. Kirk Coleman
who just signed.
Right, rather than Raphael Bush, like switch, you know, one former Saint for another. That's probably your secondary.
Yeah.
Right there. At nine guys. If you want to keep a 10, maybe a guy like Lewis could sneak on, but nine is probably all you're going to do.
Now, was he an undrafted guy last season?
He came over off waivers from New England.
Waivers from New England, okay.
He came over actually with the Gorkas, with the Hunter. They both came from there.
Oh, big punting battle, too.
It was, yeah, and I thought Corey with the E looked a lot better than Corey without the E.
Yeah.
And I liked Corey without the E last preseason before he tore his knee up.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope, I mean, it's now he's at 11 months at this point removed from the ACL injury. I hope that it's not lingering effects. But he was, his, New York has just looked more consistent. I mean, more hang time. Better when it was in traffic. I mean, they were working really good from the back of the end zone stuff that I saw. Bjorkes looked a lot better.
Oh, cool.
Than Hardy.
Okay. Cool. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. No matter what, do you remember who the punter was? I can't even remember at the end of last season where the guy was punting like 30-yard punts.
Oh, it's freaking Dar.
Dar, that's right, Matt Dar.
Yeah, it was like, please get this guy.
What is going on here? This special team. So my opinion about special teams is 90% of it, it doesn't usually phase any game.
Yeah.
If you are the top special teams or the bottom special teams, it affects games.
Absolutely.
And we were at the bottom, and it affected almost every game. It was pathetic.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, I mean, coaching definitely didn't help, but they had, like, Matt Dar punting.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if I would be much worse than Matt Dar.
It was
punting. It was bad.
And then suddenly they seemed to forget how to cover kicks.
Yeah.
At different points, too, there. Like
letting guys.
Yeah, it's just guys getting big returns when it shouldn't happen. I remember the Jet game. That
Andre
lost.
Roberts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, torched us.
Yeah, I was at the Jet game that they won.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember sitting there, all my Bills gear. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to wear it. Buffalo's going to get tumbled. They're starting freaking Matt Barkley. He was, like, you know, drinking Miller Lights on his couch 2 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden he's a quarterback.
Yeah.
And that speaks to how poorly they handled the quarterback situation last year. But I remember looking at everybody around me, and we're all like, this is happening.
Even the Jets fans are like, really? And you're like, yeah, I guess so.
Our school, we were there for the football team's fundraiser. So there were like 50 people from Walk Hill High School, and all of us were there. And they all know that I'm the Bills fan, my wife is the Bills fan, my buddy AJ from Cuba Lake is the Bills fan. So we're all just sitting there, us. And everybody else goes, shut up.
Oh, that's funny. That's really cool. You know, I'm really excited. I know we mentioned the stable quarterback room for the first time. And after that game, I was like, wow, we have a quarterback that can win us. Now, mind you, the Jets were terrible last year.
Yeah.
For the most part. They were tire fire. And I'm hoping that continues this season. I guess, you know, I guess to wrap up this podcast, I know we've been talking for a while, and I appreciate all of you, you know, giving. It's good to get input from someone that writes all the time.
I'm so happy. I mean, like, I was saying when Matt said to me, like, Nate wants to have him on the podcast. I'm like, great. Otherwise, I'm going to be sitting in my hotel room by myself. This is perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
I love doing this. This is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what do you look for, I guess, in the season? So we talked about, like, training camp. But obviously, you have thoughts about how the season's going to go. What are you watching for? I mean, Josh Allen, you're obviously going to be watching for. But is there anything specifically? You did the 90 players in 90 days. Are there players you're going to, we mentioned, like, undrafted guys? Here, let's start there. Undrafted guys, we mentioned David Sills.
Yeah.
Are there any other guys that you're watching for undrafted-wise that you're really going to be, you think might have a chance to make the team? Because last year, it was Levi Wallace.
Yeah.
It was Robert Foster.
Right.
Guys that all of a sudden went from practice squad to starters and legitimate starters. I mean, credit to Brandon Bean. Do you see any guys like that from the 90 players that you looked at that have the potential to crack the roster this year?
I got to be honest, I don't.
Okay.
And it's not a knock on those guys. They're pretty good. But I think it's a positive towards the talent that's on the roster. I mean, we're going to cut guys that are going to go play on other teams this year. When's the last time that really happened where Buffalo let guys go and they were signed by other teams and the other teams were like, yes,
yeah,
we signed this guy that used to be with Buffalo. But you probably have to go back to the early 2000s,
yeah,
you know, when, like, John Butler had to cut the cap because he had, like, Andre Reed and Smith and Thurman Thomas. And that's kind of sad. Or even, like, with Tom Donahoe when they let Keo Spikes go and they let London Fletcher go. But I don't. I mean, if there's anyone, I think it's going to be a linebacker.
Okay.
And I like Juwan Fabi.
Okay.
Because he's huge. And he used to be either a wide receiver. I think he used to be a receiver. And now he's a linebacker.
Okay.
He's like 6'2", 230. And great cover dude. That, to me, that would be the guy who you try to keep in the back.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to have any of the naked. And if, like, Sills is a guy whose story I really like, I would love for him to make the roster.
Mm.
I think that, like, just watching today, and I know it's a snap judgment. I mean, if you're going for the big receiver, is it Sills or Duke Williams that I'm putting on the roster tomorrow? It's Duke Williams.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to have Sills go on my practice squad. And if he gets poached,
yeah,
go ahead. Go play on somebody else's 53.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Easley, I dropped too many balls. There were a lot of balls in him right in the hands today in the one portion that he just wiggled out. You know, there was one point where one of the coaches had the big body bag and was smacking the guys with it. And, like, Zay Jones, who's been ripped apart for his low catch percentage by a lot of fans, grabbed the ball, and as he turned, the coach smacked the ball with the mat and holds onto it. Easily goes to do the same thing. Coach to the middle of the back.
Oh, really?
Ball pops out. So, I mean, Jones, I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I can't see a guy cracking the receivers out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think that it's going to be a pretty stacked up roster.
Gotcha.
My expectations for the season are high.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, this is something that last year might have been the last time a guy like Levi Wallace or whatever could make the team,
yeah,
and start and get a chance and get the opportunity without completely standing out as an undrafted rookie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really that. But like you said, it speaks to the talent that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott brought on this roster, which is great. It's great for us fans to not have to rely on. Because you remember the years where it's like the first or second round draft picks never panned out. We'd be hoping for the Stevie Johnsons or whoever just to somehow step up.
Desmond Lewis. There's like so many guys throughout the years who are like training camp darling, like, yeah, Brandon Riley.
Fred Jackson. Oh yeah, Brandon,
yeah,
Riley.
Brandon Riley is going to be the best receiver ever, and all of this. And where is Brandon Riley? Is he on a roster? I'm seriously asking. I have no idea.
Same. I have no idea.
Like, did I love Brandon Riley when he was in Bills camp? Yes. Did I think Brandon Riley should make the team? No. You know, like, if he's starting for you, you have a problem.
Yeah.
At that point. So, like, if you look at that receiving core, like, the top five is fairly set. It looks like.
Go ahead.
It's Brandon.
Yep.
It's Jones, it's Easley. Then Foster's rotating in.
Yep.
And Roberts is rotating in.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Do you think that they, if they were to keep a sixth, do you think it's Sills? Or is it Cam Phillips? Or Isaiah McKenzie? Or Ray McLeod? I mean, it's...
I know, it's a great question. And, it, and I think a lot of it is going to depend on what they do with the tight ends.
Yep.
A lot of it's going to depend on what they do with Patrick DeMarco, which seems crazy.
Yep.
But if you can cut, if you can keep four tight ends, and one of them can play like an H-back role, and you get rid of DeMarco, then you might be able to keep an extra wide receiver. What are they going to do with Sanarius Perry? Does he stay on as a gunner? What are they going to do with Yeldon?
Yeah, because he's not a special teams guy.
No, yeah, and it's really interesting. I don't know, because they are going to cut guys who are, they're going to cut guys who are going to start for other teams.
Yeah,
which is crazy to say about a team that was 6-10 last year, but they're going to cut guys that are going to start on other teams. I think I'm just going to go. I think they're going to win 10 games.
Wow.
I really do.
Wow.
And I think I'm crazy. And a lot of people are going to think I'm crazy, but I don't care. I think they're going to win 10
Well, you
games.
Also said they were going to win the Super Bowl, so that's not.
That's right.
10 games isn't
easy. 19 games, exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, I'm with you. It's a very optimistic season.
Yeah.
Unlike last season, I feel like, especially with the cap hell that we were in, that we knew going into this,
yeah.
I think we all accepted as Bills fans that this was coming. This year, we have cap room. We still have cap room. We're still building cap room for next season. And, you know, they're still at least a few years away from signing a $30 million contract or whatever to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
So they have room to spend money. This is the first. They could legitimately win 8 to 12 games. I mean, anywhere in between that range.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me either way.
Right.
I don't know. It's an exciting time to be a Bills fan. So you're going to have an article up tomorrow by the time I'm posting this tomorrow. So it'll be Sunday.
Yeah.
So you'll have an article up against then. People at Buffalo Rumblings, which I'm sure will check it out. But they should check it. Sean, do you have a Twitter handle or anything?
I am the most boring Twitter follow on earth. I was telling you before, my Twitter is for the varsity softball team that I coach.
Uh-huh.
So I had to send out an apology because I said, I'm going to be at Bills camp, so I'm sorry for spamming all your feeds. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, random moms of my players who follow me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I looked down at my phone when I got back to the hotel, and it's like, you have 27 Twitter notifications. And I'm like, what the hell? I haven't had 27 notifications this whole year.
Yeah.
So my handle is all caps, W. I don't even know my own Twitter handle.
Pull out your phone, David.
You know what? I do, actually. I actually have to look at it. Uh-huh. I can't remember if I went WSHS. _ softball NY or WHS. My goodness.
Well, I'll tell them right now, if you want to follow Circling the Wagons, it's at CTW Pod, Circling the Wagons Pod. But if you want to follow Sean...
Oh, here I am. It's capitals, WSHS, _ capital S softball,
mm-hmm.
and then capital NY as in New York.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty... you might want to give that one again.
I might, yeah, right? No, don't... Just follow Buffalo Rumblings. They're so much more important at that point, yeah. I mean, unless you're really interested in Section 9 softball, then you can go ahead and...
Cool. And you had your first garbage plate?
I did.
Yeah, and?
It was delicious. I'm not going to eat for the rest of the week, I don't think, but luckily... tomorrow is Sunday, so I can start.
So here's a question. I had Jeff Kentrowski on before Scarecrow, and he talked about this Wingin' It article he did with it. It was a garbage plate wrap, and he did it with baked beans. Did you get baked beans on your garbage plate? What'd you get?
Mine was two cheeseburgers, the mac salad.
Mac salad, good.
Hash browns.
Uh-huh.
And they threw like a hot meat sauce on top of them. Onions in there.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was delicious.
Hot sauce was good?
For a bit, I felt like I was going to die. I needed to order a stout so that I could put the fire out in there. But, I had a sour with it. And that was a terrible pairing. Don't ever do that.
You feel like you want to take a nap right now?
I kind of do, actually. Yeah, you may find me sleeping in my car. I'll have 17 messages from Matt again. Like, are you at camp? You're like, what's camp? I'm still in a strip mall in Webster.
Oh, that's cool. So, for people that haven't been able to tell, we're at a brewery in Webster that Matt suggested.
Witchcraft Brews.
I've never been here. It's a cool place. You know what's funny is I had a garbage plate earlier. I went to Shooters in Fairport after the train camp, and dude, I was out of it. I think it had to do with dehydration and the heat today. I was just knocked out at 1:00. I was just drank some water, and I'm like, I need to just lay down for a minute. And I'm back at it now, drinking with you. I, you know, appreciate you coming on, obviously. It's good to talk to somebody whose articles I read all the time. Obviously, they can follow your work on BuffaloRealMakes.com again. But, man, looking forward to a great season. Looking forward to your articles. Are you still doing your 90 Players 90 Days? Are you done with that?
No, I am, what do you call it? I have a whole big spreadsheet poem. I've got everybody who I have. I haven't planned out who's going to write what order. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm through. Gosh.
Hopefully you didn't do Damari Scott already, did you?
No.
Good.
No, you know who I had done who was really, was my favorite name, Quindarius Thaggard, who I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but he sounds like he should be the king of the White Walkers or something.
Yeah, no kidding.
Mean, like,
that's a medieval, that's a cool Renaissance name.
That's the coolest name I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. I wish I were named Quindarius Thaggard, but that's, I did.
I think you automatically go to Harvard if your name is that.
Absolutely, yeah. And then they cut him and they signed L.T. Walton, so that's, okay. It's 90 players in 90 days, but I mean, I think last year I wrote 108.
Oh, gotcha.
Of them because they kept cycling guys at the bottom.
Guys that were cut that you already wrote about?
Yeah, so that's why I always try to do the guys who are like at the bottom of the depth chart early so I can kind of get them written. Mm-hmm. And the dudes who you know are going to be there, you can sit and wait on them a little bit. But the roster's been a little bit more set this year. Now that I've said that, I'm sure like there'll be a Monday news dump or something where Buffalo has cut four guys and signed five new ones and then place this guy on injured reserve. Then I'm just going to end up expanding and continuing on and on and on. But I think I've written like 74 of them at this point.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. So you know the roster better than most people. So we've had Mike Love on the podcast before.
Okay.
Super cool guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Very, I feel like he's a process guy.
Yeah.
He's one of the reasons why they brought him back. What did you think about him? Did you write his article yet?
And I did, and he's in the mix.
Do you think he's in the mix for that fourth defensive end spot?
Truthfully, I do. Uh-huh. I don't think they're high on Eddie Yarbrough.
No.
At this point, I think he's soured. I'm not going to lie. I'm intrigued more by Eli Harold and his pass rushing ability. Mm-hmm. I think Love is the more complete end, but I think Love is kind of redundant because he reminds me of Shaq Lawson.
Oh, yeah.
In that regard, where they are very good. I think Lawson's great against the run, for the record.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think Love is the same, a little bit of a smaller body type, but he sets the same kind of edge. Maybe there's more pass running potential that I haven't seen enough of. But that's, if they keep four, it's going to be a coin flip, I think, between him and Harold. Mm-hmm. And if they keep five, he's on the roster.
I bet you they could sneak Mike Love on the practice squad one more season if they had to, and then have him take the spot of Shaq Lawson if they don't re-sign him, which I don't know if they will be able to.
This debate has happened in the comment section a lot on Rumblings. I know that I don't know how much of a market he's going to have outside of Buffalo just because his numbers don't pop. But I also don't see Buffalo paying him a ton of money. And I don't see him being willing to settle for something that's not a good free agent deal after having had his fifth-year option turned down.
Having already paid Trent Murphy a lot of money, Jerry Hughes a lot of money, I can't see them doing that to a third guy, a third defensive end. I feel like they have their two top guys for now.
Yes.
Now, they could always cut Trent Murphy, but I feel like they're not going to stretch it.
It's interesting because I think after this year, like, I think if they cut him next year, I think it only counts $1.5 million, $2 million on the cap in terms of the dead. That's one thing that Bean deserves a ton of credit for is the structure of the contracts that he's put together.
Front loading them so that every year after that, they can just, there's no, it doesn't kill you.
He did it with Tyler Croft. Did it with Spencer Long. Spencer Long's basically on a one-year deal with two one-year options in there. It's brilliant what he did with a lot of these contracts. So
it's low risk, high reward.
Correct.
Right? So if they turn out, great. You got them for a cheap deal for the next few years. If it doesn't work out, then you cut them with almost no consequence.
Right.
That's how it should have been done. Whereas opposed to a guy like Whaley was always signing like Cordy Glenn to the highest deal for an offensive tackle. And, you know, just because, and that's one of the reasons, because they weren't drafting well enough, they could not get away with it.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Whereas we're talking about a wealth of talent where they might, in the future, dump guys that are talented because they have younger guys to fill the gap cheaper or
yeah.
whatever.
It's
crazy to think that way. Like, is this what a normal organization, like a...
Yeah.
An efficient,
well-run professional organization. Might this be one? It's kind of weird.
Yeah. So it's exciting. This is one of the more exciting off seasons, I think, as a Bills fan, because 2 years ago when Sean McDermott came in, they got rid of everyone. They lost a lot of... They traded a lot of guys. You weren't expecting a whole lot. They made the playoffs. Last year, big cap hit.
Yep.
A lot of dead cap. This year, now it's starting to come together.
Yeah.
They have their quarterback in place.
Yep.
They have their offensive line in place. They have their wide receivers in place. Before I leave, I know we've been talking for, way too long. And I appreciate all of this, but one thing I always thought was wide receiver one. Everyone always talks about the Odell Beckham Jr., the Antonio Browns, the Mike Evans, and this is where I come out on all of that, is that it's great to have a wide receiver one. The Bills do not have one, a specific wide receiver
right.
one. But I guess my argument against that is, how far do those teams actually really go, for the most part?
Right.
I mean, how far is an Odell Beckham Jr. team gone?
Yeah.
How far is an A.J. Green team gone? How far is a Mike Evans team gone? So you don't necessarily need that to win in this league. Look at when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Who was their wide receiver one? Alshon Jeffrey, I guess.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was putting up wide receiver one numbers.
Zach Ertz. Was their number one.
Yeah.
No, your wide receiver one is the guy who helped your offense the best. And that's our wide receiver one is John Brown.
John Brown, period. Yeah.
And that's it. He's not a prototypical wide receiver number one, but that guy is Buffalo's wide receiver number one.
And are you okay with that, or do you think...
110%. Yeah. Like, you can't... I'm not even going to let you finish the sentence. 110%. Yeah.
Because
like
are you of the same mindset? You don't need that guy, necessarily, because there's so few... There's so few Andre Johnsons out there. There's so few Calvin Johnsons.
Who does the defense key on with Buffalo's offense?
Who?
You know what I mean? Go ahead. Take Brown out.
Take Brown out.
So now Beasley's open. Take Beasley out. Okay. Now Jones is open. Take Jones out. Okay. Now Knox is open. Take the running game out. Okay, now Allen's just going to throw it 50 yards, you know, in the air, flicking his wrist, not even trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cover everything underneath. Now you put Robert Foster and John Brown on opposite sides of the field.
Right.
Which way does the safety go? You throw it to the other guy.
Yep. Make Allen throw it underneath. Okay, now he's got Beasley, and he's got Jones, who can operate in the slot a little bit more. That's an underrated thing for them, with Brown able to work outside, with Foster able to work outside. Jones does a lot of really, he's huge to work in the slot, and he does a lot of good work as a slot receiver. So that's, and he doesn't necessarily have to start as the slot receiver to end as the slot receiver in there. Like, he could start lined up outside, you motion him into the slot, put him tight right over a tight end, all of a sudden you've got some messy patterns in there. So they've got a lot of flexibility in there where they have fun.
Yep, and each one of those guys is every week capable of 100 yards receiving.
Oh, and by the way, you'd better have a spy on the quarterback too while you're doing all of that, because if you don't, then he's going to run for 100 yards too. So that's, I can't remember a time where a Buffalo offense was as scary. Probably like the first 8 weeks of Drew Bledsoe's Buffalo career might have been it. Even like the Fitz offense was gimmicky. You know what I mean? Like when you had Bledsoe throwing a Carlos Price to Molds, handed off to Travis Henry, who was so often forgotten and so underrated as a running back. Like, that dude was tough as nails, man. And that's like, that was a scary offense for somebody to have to stop. And that's probably the last time where you've looked at Buffalo and it's been like, yeah, that's a scary offensive team. They could be legit scary this year.
Cool. That's an exciting thing to end it with. So, Sean, they can catch you on Twitter, on BuffaloRumblings.com. Thank you so much for coming on. And meet me out for a beer or two.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Yeah, it's a good afternoon. It's a beautiful day. Good beer. I'll leave it with that. Guys, definitely check out his articles from training camp last couple of days. First-hand observations that a lot of other media outlets weren't able to get. I wasn't able to get. I'm sitting in the bleachers like normal people, and this guy's over here with Sal Capaccio and Joe Viscalia just rubbing elbows. Best friends, you know, you're going to meet them out later for beers, but cool, man. Thanks again for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot.
Hey, guys. Thanks for hanging in there. As you can tell, I did not bring any of my podcasting equipment with me, but there was a lot of good topics that we went over there, so appreciate you guys listening. I look forward to talking to Sean again in the future. And if you couldn't tell, we're both really pumped about what we saw. And one thing I've noticed for Bills training camp practice so far, and it's still early, but what I've seen so far is that the offense, for once, does not seem light years behind the defense right now. And it's definitely been that way in previous camps. And to me, that's a very important thing. It's an exciting topic considering how good our defense has been and how good it could be this season. And I don't know, usually at this time of year, we're justifying why the defense is just absolutely owning the offense. They're picking off every pass by the quarterback, and they're just always into the backfield. We don't have to do this year, and it's that to me, that's huge. So I also wanted to say that the bartender at Witchcraft was a Bills fan, so we talked to him a little bit about it, Sean and I. And then he also complimented me on my Josh Allen jumping over the haters t-shirt. So if you want to check out that design, go to tpublic.com/stores/ctwpod, where we just released 3 new Circle the Wagons designs, which people really seem to like. Check out that design and more at tpublic.com/stores/ctwpod. So thanks again to Sean Murphy, a great dude, great writer. And check out all of his work at buffalorumblings.com. So for me, Nate, go Bills. We'll talk to you guys again soon next week. And we're going to recap and review season 2 of Embedded. So guys, make sure you binge it all before then. And we'll all talk about it then. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.